Welcome, my friends. I'm Dave Champion, and this is my awesome co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are
totally unprepared.
And actually, that's not too far off base for today.
No.
No, it's really not.
Yeah, we spent the majority, we have lunch every show day before we appear here in the studio.
And we're lucky if we spend 20% of that time actually talking about the show.
Yeah, most of the time we buckle down a little bit and talk about the show. I mean, I think it was like...
Otherwise, you just catch up and talk about other stuff.
Right, today was not a very responsible lunch dialogue.
Yeah. about an hour ago from recording time, of course, this will be old news tomorrow when it gets out there, but Ted Cruz announced his running mate would be Carly Fiorina.
Now...
Which is interesting.
Aside from the part you just shared with me before he went on the air, which I had no idea of, and probably the audience doesn't either, leaving aside that factor, how do you read choosing her?
An attempt to try to win more states. You also got to realize yesterday, mm-hmm. which was like Super Tuesday 3.
Yet again.
That Trump swept all five states.
So I hear. Yeah.
So this is an opportunity to try to garnish more. And I got to say, not a bad ticket. But generally speaking, you don't tend to see candidates selecting running mates. And you'll pretty much never see them ever discuss cabinet members and such as that, because that's the sort of thing where it could work in towards favoritism and making deals behind the scenes that are otherwise FEC violations, Federal Election Commission violations.
And perhaps they could be shooting themselves in the foot as far as voters are concerned.
They could be, yes, if somebody wanted to pick a running mate who sucked.
Yeah, or a cabinet appointment that somebody is adamantly against.
Right.
They're for the candidate, but they can't tolerate the appointment. Right. Yeah,
so all very interesting stuff. But we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
We'll see.
Back on the agenda again, at least not totally unprepared.
Yet again is AT&T.
And Apple.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Apple and the FBI.
Yeah. So to catch the audience up, the government, brought a suit against Apple under the All Writs Act, absolutely ridiculous, wanting Apple to give them a master key to all encrypted iPhones, but under the auspices of trying to get into the terrorist phone of San Bernardino
guys.
And then we find out that Apple is in court in New York, I'm sorry, DOJ is in court in New York against an Asian gang drug trafficking case where they have the defendant's phone. They've had it for, I don't know, close to 2 years now. Can't get into the phone. Trying to move forward with the case. Again, they say to Apple, but in this case, the distinguishing characteristic, they weren't asking for a master key. They were saying we need all reasonable help, which Apple has provided, according to Apple's own figures, something in excess of 150 times. Yeah. They have helped law enforcement to the extent they can get into a phone. So now, a story broke last week where the government finally acknowledged exactly which phones and which operating systems. Now, my premise has always been that if they claim they got into the San Bernardino phone, which was a
more advanced operating
system, then the claim they couldn't get into a less advanced one was ridiculous. So last week a story broke that had the government...
It's like I can break into a 2016 model year car,
right?
But I can't seem to break into one from 94.
Correct. So last week they broke a story where the government actually confirmed the phones and the operating system, which it had been speculated before. This is where the government came out and told the story of both. The San Bernardino was a 5C phone running iOS 9, the latest and greatest at iOS 9, then comes like .1, .2. So whatever the 9 was at that time, the latest and greatest, that phone had. and the New York case is a 5C with iOS 7.
Because that case is a good couple years old.
Right. So that confirmed what everybody had been saying, that this was an older... And really, Apple didn't get serious about protecting user privacy until 8. So to say they can't get into a 7 is weak.
Right.
And, of course, if you read the tech blogs and the tech journals, they're laughing just as we have laughed here on the show. They're like, the claim that you can get into one but not the other is absurd.
But now DOJ says they got into that one,
yes.
But it wasn't through breaking into it.
Yes, because they need out of this. They're getting so embarrassed. I mean, the tech journals are basically calling them out as liars we have here. And so now they need out of that case. They need this to go away because it's all over the press. So they claim that now after almost 2 years, somebody presumably is when you use the phrase somebody, not the defendant, gave them the password.
Yeah, something tells me that DOJ gave somebody an amazing sweetheart deal to get access into that phone so they could save face in this case.
Make this case go away.
Yeah.
And it's just the fact that DOJ... Oh, and then I love the part of the story where they talked about that. They said, the fact that they felt compelled to, the assistant U.S. attorney in the case felt compelled to say this clearly indicates their motives for claiming. I mean, we don't even know if they got a password, right? They could be lying about that, too. And the litmus test for if they're lying about that is, will additional evidence be introduced in the case?
Which we know when it came to the San Bernardino case, what they said was, yeah, they weren't talking to anybody. We really got no information off that phone.
Yeah. No co-conspirators.
Sure. Well,
if you didn't get into the phone, that's all you could say.
Yeah.
Right. And so they could be lying about this one, too. And again, the litmus test for that is, will information from the phone be introduced in court as evidence?
And will the defense be able to, through discovery, attach the information they got off the phone?
Right, right. And I bet people who are, I'm not going to waste my time, but I bet people who are watching that case will see no evidence and additional evidence introduced into the court, because I question whether they got into the phone at all. They just want to make the story go away.
Mm-hmm.
But the part that indicates to me exactly what the government's agenda is trying to make this case go away is the AUSA who was handling the case said, and as we've been saying from the start, this isn't about setting court precedent to get into phones. What? Why would you even bring that up?
Through the All Writs Act, that's all it could possibly have been.
Right, right. And this whole charade, this circus, it's been ridiculous.
Well, there you go. I understand that there's some social media skinheads that initially thought that they liked you based on your appearance.
I'm guessing, yes.
And then once you started schooling them on what liberty really is,
yeah,
you were somehow excommunicated from their social media endeavors.
Yeah, you know.
I find this to be funny.
Oh,
because a lot of people would look at you, not know you, not hear you speak a word like, oh, look at that racist skinhead because he's tatted up and he's
right.
Bald. Not actually seeing like your tree of life, your liberty, your Malone LeVay.
Jefferson's liberty tree.
Yeah. Just seeing, oh, there's ink.
Right.
It's visible and he has no hair on the top of his head.
Yeah. And white.
Yeah. So okay. Let's pigeonhole that.
Yeah. So I think I mentioned last week that there seems to be a surge of Facebook pages, not personal pages, but pages that have a cause.
Group pages, yeah.
Group pages that are claiming that they're all about liberty. And many of them have an agenda other than that, and they're using the facade of liberty. And, of course, this was one of these groups. And the group is filled with a bunch of guys from a racist organization called the Vinlanders. And it's so funny because, you know, one individual tried to defend them and say, well, they've left racism behind. And I'm like, whoa, hang on a second. The Vinlanders are known for being skinhead racists. If these guys had a change of heart, why is the Vinlander page still being paid for? Why is it still being hosted? Why is it still up? You know, the whole thing is ridiculous, but they're trying to hide behind this facade of liberty. And so I posted some things that were liberty-based about that it is the legitimate function of government to protect the rights of minorities from being trampled on by the majority. I mean, that's to me, when I look at the structure of government created by Madison and Jefferson, one of this most crucial and legitimate functions of government, the U.S. style of government model, is that the majority cannot vote away the rights of the minority.
Absolutely.
Okay? And it doesn't matter whether the minority happens to be gun owners or black folks or anybody else, okay? The majority cannot vote away the rights of the minorities.
As has been tried in various areas throughout the history of our country.
Again and again.
Not more than 5 or 6 years ago, the people of San Francisco voted to have no guns at all within the city limits unless government. Of course, that failed.
Right. I mean, perfect example.
Yeah, perfect example.
Yeah. So, because obviously in San Francisco, I'm guessing pro-Second Amendment people are a minority.
Imagine if you see a place in, let's say that Cincinnati decided to vote to not allow any blacks in the city whatsoever.
Right.
You couldn't do that either. It has the same legal standing as voting guns out of the city.
Or you take some incredibly upscale neighborhood or say a municipal city that's, you know, 99.6% white, very upscale economic, and they say, you know, no Mexicans or blacks can live within the city. I mean,
or you've got to have a minimum income of $150,000
to live here, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I consider that, and I think any rational person who understands how our government works and what the principles of liberty are supports that as being a legitimate function of government. The government does a lot of things that are not legitimate, but we've got to support the ones that are. And so I threw some videos up there that I had done, and they're either on the DaveChampionOfLiberty.com or Dave Champion of Liberty page on Facebook. And the proverbial excrement hit the whirling item. And these guys lost their minds. And so we're going back and forth. And it's very clear to me. It's like if I said to you, hey, the left-wingers, the people who believe in gigantic government, want to take all our guns, but they want you to know, after the guns are gone, no one's going to drop the hammer on all the disarmed American people. Would you believe that?
Oh, of course not.
Right. But this group of skinheads were actually trying to get me to believe that their construct, which is that whether it be state governments or federal governments, there should be no laws barring discrimination because laws against discrimination are anti-liberty. And yet I'm to believe that the motivation of skinheads is not that they would be then free to discriminate against anyone and everyone they wanted to without government interference. I'm to believe that, well, this is their legitimate model of liberty.
What that is redefining the word, in this case, the word liberty,
yes.
But redefining any term to serve your purpose. And it's my liberty to be the biggest a-hole I can. What you don't seem to understand is liberty is freedom. What is it? Confined only by the rights and respects of the...
To respect equal rights
of others.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously these jackasses are not getting that.
Well, you know, one of the things I noticed, a lot of people who dislike anti-discrimination laws, they all tend to be white, heterosexual, middle-aged guys. And I'm like, okay, so let's just open the borders and let everybody in. And when whites, that demographic is about 15%, let's see what they have to say about anti-discrimination laws.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back, and now it's time for what is up with people who have little character or integrity being upset or baffled that politicians are in office with no character or integrity? Because it strikes me that a people that lack character and integrity should expect nothing else but their politicians to have a lack of character and integrity. Riddle me this. Do you know any people with character or integrity? I'm sorry, without character and integrity that would really be focused on getting somebody in office that has character and integrity? That goes against human nature. And yet so many of our fellows have very little character or integrity. Let me give you an example. Yesterday, I posted a video on Dave Champion's Liberty page on Facebook. And what I did was I took the two preeminent definitions of free market. By preeminent, I mean they are actually from the world of economics, the study of economics. They are the established, controlling, acknowledged definitions of free market. I took the definition of open market, which is about this much different from free market, virtually identical. And I took a bit of a commentary by Murray Rothbard, who is arguably one of the most well-known, well-respected Americans in the 20th century to promote the free market. So I took these three definitions, and I took his commentary, and I broke them down. I discussed each one, and then I overlaid them. So we get the attributes of each on top of the other. And brought in the Murray Rothbard dialogue. And the point is, the conclusion of the video was that first of all, people do not understand what the phrase free market means. The average Joe has his imagination as to what it means. It means whatever he says it means. But free market is not a term defined by what the average Joe says or thinks. It's defined by the world of economics, the study of economics. That's what the term was created to address, was a function within the world of economics, an area of study called economics. And this area of study called economics defines it, not what some guy who works at Petco says it means. No offense if you work at Petco. But yet that's how our society functions. So I clarified, this is what it means. Here's the two controlling definitions from the world of economics. Here's the controlling definition from the world of economics of open market. And here's Murray Rothbard's commentary. So I combined them all at the end, and I demonstrated, once again, as always with my videos, through facts and evidence, that when somebody uses bigotry to stop somebody else from participating in the economic marketplace, it's not the exercise of the free market. It's terminating the free market. It's using an outside influence, discrimination, which has nothing to do with economics, to actually stop the free market, the open market, from functioning as defined as its purpose is and the purpose it serves within the world of economics. Well, there may have been a time when that page got swarmed by more angry people, but I can't remember when. And I went no further than what I just shared with you. Here's what this means. Here's what that means. Here's what Rothbard says. When we combine them all, here's what they say. Here's the combined message. When through bigotry and you block somebody out of the economic marketplace, you're not exercising free market. You're blocking the free market based on the definitions, based on Rothbard's commentary. I'll never forget the very first time I went back and visited that page a couple hours later, the first comment is Dave Champion is a communist. So for having looked at factual definitions, having looked at the commentary of, as I said, perhaps the most noted, respected free market promoter as an economist in America, Murray Rothbard, for looking at these factual issues and bringing them to the table and proving with evidence my point, I'm a communist. And I went through the comments, and I respond primarily in a fact-based method. Somebody asserts X. I say, well, X is not true, and here's why, no pun intended, and provide the facts that show that X is not credible, it's not real, it's not what's happening in the world, it's not what the statistics bear out, whatever that evidence happens to be. Didn't matter. No matter what evidence was presented, these people the insults just flew. I think a great many of these people, by the way, are bigots, and they were inflamed that one of the tools that they've held on to in order to one of the primary pillars of trying to force their bigotry into the marketplace, that by facts and evidence I took that pillar away. And they were inflamed. And I think the fact that in the video I commented on the fact that many of the people who hold those views are bigots, I was calling them out, and they just can't have that it just inflames them. So we go on with this debate, and it reminded me of an article that I read a couple weeks ago, interestingly published in 2010. And the article discusses the fact that research, it's not just an article, it's an article reporting on research done by psychologists and other researchers. And what they found in this research is that people will not make decisions based on facts, which is something I've discussed here on the show, but now we have the research to back it up. They actually went so far as to take a group of individuals and they gave them circumstances from the left or the right of politics. They use politics because politics is very emotional for people, and they wanted people's emotion to be involved rather than purely intellect. And they gave them, if it was somebody on the right, they gave them information from supposedly people on the left. If the person was from the left, they gave them information from, say, political administrations or topics that are typically held by the right. And they gave them situations where the truth of the matter was not in question. So-and-so did or did not do this. The budget at the end of such and such a year was greater or lesser than on a previous year. These were things where there was no question as to the correctness, the factual nature of the answer. And what they found was, and then they also asked them to rate their confidence in the answer. The disturbing thing they found was the people who rated their confidence to be highest in their answer were the people who, in subsequent conversations, when they were discussing what the facts were, had the least knowledge about the question they were asked. They had the least knowledge, but they, in their answer, gave themselves the highest confidence that they were knowledgeable in that topic. Making it even worse, they found, the researchers found that when they introduced the facts to show each party that their answer was not consistent with the evidence, was not consistent with the fact, what they found was that the people did not change their answer. They hardened their position. They became more intransient after being shown the evidence they were wrong. Now, I don't know how you feel about that. I consider that a gigantic character flaw. I consider that a lack of personal integrity. You take a position, you put your name on it, you stamp it and say, this is my position. And somebody comes to you and gives you evidence, and that evidence indicates you're wrong. Anything other than I didn't know that, let me check this evidence, make sure it's true, and then if it is, I guess I'm going to have to reevaluate my position. Anything other than that is in a lack of personal integrity. That means the person prefers their lie to the truth. And in politics, it was nearly universal. And of course, this goes back to what I began the conversation with, these racists, and we're to believe that that their paradigm that they call liberty, that would take off all government controls that protect minorities, that all they're really after is liberty. They're not trying to create an environment where all the laws are stripped away so they can do their racist thing. Nah, who would believe that? So, Bill, I have a couple questions for you.
First of all, can I ask you something?
Sure.
How dare you bring in facts and intellectual information into an emotional topic where people are aligning their pieces on their chessboard around their emotion, and you actually provide them with some sort of cognitive thought? How dare you do that,
Dave? I consider myself suitably chagrined. So, laws that said that you cannot refuse to hire the most qualified applicant simply because, as an example, he has more melanin in his skin than you do. Those laws have existed. I didn't bother to look up the exact date they were passed. We'll call it 40 years, four decades. Okay.
It would have been the Civil Rights Act of 1959.
Okay. So my question is, in all your years on this planet, have you ever heard anyone, ever, say that those laws enslaved business owners?
No. And I've never experienced it.
Nor have I. But this is what I got yesterday. That these laws that require people not to act as bigots in the marketplace, it's the government enslaving business owners. No.
Enslaving them into selling their product or service and making money off somebody they otherwise wouldn't go out to dinner with?
Right, right.
There's a lot of people I've done business with that I don't want to sit down to dinner with.
Right.
But I provide a product or a service, they have the money to buy it. That's the reason I'm in business.
And that is the free market. Saying I'm not going to sell to you because whatever your bigoted reasons are, that stops the free market.
Right.
Because free market is about business, right? You've also, as have I, you have also owned or managed a number of businesses over the years.
Yes.
Where you had responsibility over hiring and firing. Was there ever a time when you felt that you were being oppressed and under the gun and could no longer make decisions freely on your own as a business owner or manager because there were laws that stopped people from discriminating and hiring?
Not even close, actually, no.
Nor me. I've never had anybody sitting across the desk from me that I've been interviewing for a job, that I've been looking at the resume and talking with them. There's never been a single case, and I'm 56 years old, and I have been self-employed or involved in running businesses from 1987 to today. Never once has it ever occurred to me that I had some concern in the back of my head because there were laws that prevent discrimination.
That if you hired this person, you're going to be somehow oppressed by the government.
Right, or if I didn't. Never occurred to me because I never make decisions on hiring and firing other than on business criteria, right? So it's like, I don't care that there are laws that criminalize rape, because I have no intention of raping.
You know what gets me is a lot of people that are crowing for about this sort of thing are not business owners. They're employees.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're trying, I would want to discriminate. You know what? You're not a business owner. You have not been in the shoes of needing to struggle and have everything out there. Shut up.
Yeah. And we'll be back right after these words.
Well, let's find out what Bill has to rant about today. You know what really grinds my gears? When I go in to pay for something in a store that deals in cash, and they can't make change for the bill in which I offer to pay for the good or service. It drives me a little bonkers. Now I can imagine, a little mom and pop shop in a small town might not be able to crack a $100 bill if they've already had one or two already today. But I'm talking about when I go into the big city of Las Vegas and I want to pay for something in a reasonable sized store and I provide them with a $100 bill to pay for it and they tell me, oh, I'm sorry, I can't make change for that. Seriously? And here's the other thing. Virtually every bill I hand to virtually every single checker there is that's of a $10 denomination or higher, they grab that friggin' bill and hold it up to the light and look at it. And I don't know what that's supposed to do for you. I really don't. But I got to tell you, I'm thinking somebody ought to invent a machine that you can slide every bill through rapidly and it does this for you on an electronic basis. Because to wait while, okay, you can't change the $100 bill when I'm buying 65 bucks worth of stuff, but you'll take the three 20s and the 10 and look at every single one of them. What a friggin' waste of time. If you can't change out the money that we use, and keep in mind, the $100 bill, which isn't worth anywhere near as much as it was, say, 25, 30 years ago, there used to never be trouble changing it then. Now there is. This store won't accept anything larger than a $20 bill. Or we won't accept anything larger than a 50 after 6 p.m. Whatever. Seriously? The largest bill we have is a $100 bill. And if you can't keep enough change in order for that, what are you doing in business? I mean, literally, I have walked out of stores and had sales, because that's, it's like, do you have anything smaller than that? Yeah, I have $104 on me. I've got a $100 bill, and I got four ones. And what I'm trying to buy is 22 bucks. So either you can change the 100 bucks or take the four and call it good. You know, what do you want to do? I mean, come on. Be able to make some friggin' change. Here's another thing that grinds my gears. And I'm pretty sure I talked about this a year or more ago. If I pay with a debit card, now you got the chip, right? The chip is nowhere near as fast as sliding, but, you know, it's the security thing. Great. Now, that takes longer than handing the five or six bills over and the checker looking at them in the light every single friggin' time. It takes longer to actually use the little chip. There's no speedy checkout anymore. There's just not. Unless you know exactly what you're buying, you bring perfect change. Even then, they'll be doing this with the stupid bills. It grinds my gears when you use the terminal to pay with your debit card and it asks you 103 different questions. My God, slide the thing. It's this amount. Is that okay? Yes. What's your PIN? Here's my PIN. You want any cash back? No. Great. You sure you don't want any cash? How about a warranty? You want the warranty? No. All right. What's your blood type? What's your sign? What's your Chinese sign? Come on. What's your mother's maiden name? Really? You know, how old were you the first time you blew a snot rocket in the backyard? Well, it seems like we have so many questions on some of these terminals. I got to say, some of the bigger stores, for instance, I'll give you like Walmart, not a bunch of questions. They want to get people in and out and go. Some of the other stores, for instance, Home Depot, used a little slider to check out there. There's a bunch of questions involved. I don't like it. I really don't. I used to not be a fan of the self-checkout line. It's like, I got to check out and do all this stuff and scan all my garbage, and the scanner doesn't want to find this, or it's off on that, or I'm buying potatoes which are weighed by the pound, and you got to know the code. I never wanted to deal with the self-checkout. But I got to tell you, having to deal with some of the checkers that are out there now, I'm happy to do the self-checkout. I actually know in some of my local stores, I know if I'm getting in line, it's like, okay, this line is longer now. And I more so look, like when I go to my local Walmart, I look to see who the checker is in a line before I choose whether or not to get in there. There's two or three checkers that are slow, nosy, and take forever to ring stuff up and handle change. I don't want to get into a conversation with you. I didn't come here for conversation. If I want conversation, I'm going to call my buddy Dave. Or I'm going to stay at home and I'm going to talk to my woman. Or I'm going to call one of my kids or my mom or my dad or somebody. I'm not going to stand here and get into the world of Bill Carnes with a checker that I don't know. I'd like you to please be the fastest in the Southwest. Check me out and get me on my way, because I got to tell you, I can't stand being in those friggin' stores. I really can't. I do not enjoy going to Walmart. I don't enjoy going to the grocery store. I don't particularly enjoy going to Home Depot or any. I don't like the experience of having to go shopping. And thank the stars and the heavens that my girlfriend's not the biggest shopper either. She'd actually prefer to shop online, as in a lot of cases, so would I. So, with that being said, please have change for a $100 bill or three, because the guy in front of me and the lady behind me might be paying with a $100 bill as well. In addition, on those terminals for your ATM cards, for your debit cards, please cut out all the excess BS questions and just narrow it down to, is the amount okay? Here's the PIN. Do you want cash back? Or even take the cash back out of the loop. Let them go to a friggin' ATM to get cash back. Dave?
Oh, where to start? You know, I've often said the big lie when they first introduced these cards in the card readers at the cash register, which was about 20 years ago. The biggest lie I think I've ever heard from the banking community was checkout will be faster this way. And I actually have sat in line, and when the cashier gives the amount, start timing it. And here they go with their card, and then they have problems with their PIN, and they have to do it again, and the cashier has to help them. And then I've walked up, and they give me the amount. I got my cash in my hand because I don't wait until I'm asked, right? Cash is already out.
Oh, wait a minute. You don't wait for the amount and then go grab your wallet and see what you got?
There's one thing that annoys the hell out of me. A woman in front of me, and I say it's women because they have pocketbooks and purses. We don't, right? Who will sit there, and the cashier will say, you know, that'll be $27.18. Up comes the purse, open the purse, get out the... What, like you didn't know you were going to have to get your money out?
Damn it, get your act together, lady.
Oh, my God. But one of the biggest lies I've ever heard is that it was going to take less time, and I've timed it, and it's about, for me to pay with cash, takes about one-fifth the time, based on my watching people over the years and timing it, one-fifth the time it takes the average person to check out with the card reader thing. The restaurant that we had lunch at today, you said the $100, I got $100 and $4. I was in there a couple days ago, and I had a large bill, and I had, I think, $1 less than the actual cost of the lunch, and nothing for a tip, right? So it was this big bill or this, and one of the people who own the place, you know, you have, they're always at the register. She says, just give me what you got. I said, you don't want the big business. She says, no, more hassle than it's worth. And she took
really?
The, took less
hey,
money.
What are you talking about, a cash-based business?
Well, I guess in their case, you know what a volume they do.
Sure.
I guess in their case, they want to make sure they don't have to go to the bank in the middle of the day and, mm-hmm. and change more big bills into little bills to keep going.
Yeah, they're getting paid so.
Yeah.
You know, here's another thing that gets me. It's like when I go to these stores where there's a checker and they're doing their stuff, as I have my card in hand, if I'm paying with my card, and as soon as it says you can swipe your card, I swipe it, enter in my PIN, yep. and then from there, it's like, okay, as soon as the checker is done, it gets up to her, waiting on checker. Said, I'm good. So they push a button. Is it okay? Yes. Good. Because I already swiped my card and put my PIN in. What and I appreciate that. Get it done. Now, of course, you got to have the stupid thing in there with the little card reader, whatever it is,
yeah.
that chip, which just takes a while. That sucks.
What was I? Oh, the first place I ever, this goes back several years ago, that I was ever asked a question other than the required questions, I believe it was Best Buy, and they wanted my my zip code. I'm like, how is this relevant to me giving you money? I'll never forget. I was sitting there, you know, I went through the, you know, zip the card, and there was the amount, okay, and, you know, PIN number, blah, 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 and then it says, zip code. And I remember looking at this thinking, what? Why do they need my zip code? I just give them my PIN number.
To direct advertising.
Well, I actually asked the clerk. I was so taken aback. I said, why do you need my zip code? She said, well, it's so that we know where our customers are actually coming from, you know, in geographically in reference to this store location. Now, that may not have been a full-featured explanation, but probably the one they were told to give.
Right.
You know, and I was like, I don't want to give it. And so she pushed a button and it bypassed it.
I love when you go into some of these stores, they'll ask you for your email address or your phone number. And I always take the liberty, if I've got a female checker, it says, can I get your phone number? I look at her like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm flattered.
What are you proposing? And of course, almost all the time my girlfriend's with me, we're like, ooh, yeah, you know, it's kind of bold. I get it. You're asking me for my number, but my girl is here, right? And I got to tell you, baby, would you mind going to the bathroom for a second? Because, you know, I'd love to give it to you, but, you know, what's yours? So, of course, I always play this, and they're like, oh, no, it's for the – I'm like, yeah, sure
yeah.
I probably should have because I give you my number. You give me yours. We start talking. She gets pissed off. You might be with somebody, and it just kind of gets ugly, and I'd rather avoid that.
I have to tell you how I screwed myself with that, though, because I don't like to give out my cell phone number to anybody that I don't want calling me. Yeah. So there was a business that in order to be on like their – to get like a discount when you go to the cash register, they need to have your cell number. That's their protocol. So I gave them a cell number that I used to have when I lived in Southern California. Right? Go ahead and call me.
Yeah. Call away.
So, you know, so every time I would walk up to the register, they'd say, you know, your cell phone number, and I'd give them this old number. And but then I found out they actually were texting discounts, you know, $5 off this, whatever. They were texting those, and all you had to do was walk in and say, I received this text, and give me your number, and you'd receive the discount. And I'm like, all right, so I screwed myself there.
Did you correct your number?
I did.
Yeah, there you go.
So yeah. my principles on privacy went right up to the point where I was having to pay more money, and then it's like, okay, you can have my number.
You know, next week I'm probably going to be talking, I'll put it in my thing, I'm going to be talking about the abuse of email next week.
Ooh.
And if anybody out there has any sort of abusive email things that you want to send us in, we'll give you the email address at the beginning of the next break.
Man, just look at your spam folder for stories.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I have started regularly unsubscribing, even stuff that I used to be interested in, and I just delete it. I've been unsubscribing from all kinds of stuff.
You got to.
I got to tell you, I don't have the time to deal with it. I'm going to talk about that and rant about it next
Otherwise,
week.
Otherwise, it's a tidal wave.
It is. Yeah. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Just not 3 seconds ago, Dave says, do we know what we're talking about, by the way? And my response is, no. So here we go. This is segment four. We're supposed to talk about the emails that you send in. Obviously, we're minus a couple of this week. Send those emails to us right here. Oops. DaveandBillShow@gmail.com.
We are proving the name of the show right now.
We are. And, of course, you can always catch up on all of the prior shows. They're all uploaded. I think we're in show number 63 right now. Always check those out here at totallyunprepared.info. And we're starting a new thing today that might last indefinitely.
Now, oh, yes.
back right around Thanksgiving, which is when we were doing somewhere around show 40 or 45, something like that, we noticed a brand new roll of carpet. Now, here in the studio, we actually sit on a riser, which is, how tall is it? About a 6-inch riser?
7 or 8 inches.
Okay. And there was a brand new roll of carpet that is supposed to carpet this area.
Well, it is carpeted now.
Yes, and the carpet is in horrible condition. It really is. It probably hasn't been cleaned since the day it was laid in, maybe vacuumed, but certainly not clean. There's tape marks from the gaffer's tape and all the other tape that was put up around here. So there's a new roll of carpet. We're not even sure what the color is, but it's been in this room for about 7 months now.
Yeah.
And there was an over-under when it might go in. And I remember as soon as we saw it, I said, knowing the operation of the studio, I give you April Fool's Day, it won't be in.
Right.
Well, and sure enough, April Fool's Day came and went, and it's not in.
Yeah.
And I think the next day I said, I doubt it'll be in by Labor Day. So we're going to start counting down and talk about this, see if we can possibly, shame the studio into actually putting in some decent carpet. And I got to tell you, I'm not quite sure what the scent of the studio is, but it's not a stick-up.
It might be tied to this carpet.
It might be tied to the carpet. Yeah. It's a
good
place for a stick-up.
I think that maybe we're thinking too small because we're thinking about, date to next incremental date, holiday type things, Perhaps we should be thinking
presidential administration
years. Yeah.
It might be. By the next time we're going to have a, who knows what.
Yeah, this will be interesting. Yeah, we will revisit this every week.
Yeah, John McCain will be retired out of the U.S. Senate by the time this carpet gets replaced.
That long.
He's up for re-election this time. I got to tell you, Dave, it's interesting.
You're going to get me going on this, aren't you?
You know who Nigel Ennis is. He ran for Congress last time, and he and I are pals. And he happens to have a guy that he's familiar with who was a congressman out of South Florida. And what was his name? He was a lieutenant colonel, really conservative guy, black man.
Alan West.
Alan West, thank you. And I mean, great guy. And I asked Niger a year or two ago, I said, can you get a hold of Alan West or his people and try to encourage him to move to Arizona and primary John McCain for the U.S. Senate? Because Arizona is the type of state that if they had somebody like Alan West,
right,
they would likely be all over getting him in there.
Yeah, and
but I think Alan West actually moved into, I think he moved to Texas. That's where he is now.
Well, my thing is, you look at Arizona, which in so many ways has been the model for the citizens pushing through good legislation.
Yes.
And then they turn around every 6 years and put this neocon sphincter back in the Senate.
Yeah. I don't get it either. I think what it is the Democrats like John McCain just fine, so he picks up a whole lot of their votes.
But Nevada is not immune from this either. How many years did Nevadans send that... I'll leave off the F. That sphincter, Harry Reid.
Yeah, well, he's still in there. He's retiring. Thank the Lord.
Right. I mean, yeah, he's retiring, so Nevadans won't do the same absurd thing concerning Reid yet again.
Right.
But, I mean, the last time he was elected, I was living here. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yep, yep.
How could a rural state that is excluding Vegas, leans hard right, put this guy back in office again and again and again? It just... I was appalled.
Yeah,
I might as well move back to California.
It's interesting because we have our governor, Brian Sandoval, who is a registered Republican, but I don't think he's actually done anything conservative for the most part in his career. Very little. But yet he's beloved by all, especially those who are independent, and a lot of Democrats like him too because he is not really truly conservative. And he is a handsome Hispanic male. That doesn't speak a word of Spanish, by the way.
Right.
His parents are immigrants from Mexico. When he was born, he said, look, you're going to be speaking English. This country is an English-speaking country. That's the way it is. A lot of Italian families had done that in years gone by.
Yep.
A lot of immigrant families, they come to the United States. They get their citizenship. We are Americans now. America speaks English. This is what will be spoken in our household.
So. Sandoval is the epitome of how I have characterized the Republican Party for a long time. Not just characterized it as, but it also describes an ongoing evolutionary dynamic. And that is that the Republican Party is actually the Democratic Party light.
Oh, yes.
And what I mean by that is if we go back to, say, my grandfather's day, and he was a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, okay? If he could be resurrected today and look at the Republican Party, if you didn't put a brand on it, just said this is what these politicians are doing, he would have said, "Oh, they're liberals."
Damn near commies.
Right. And then if I had said, "Grandpa, no, they're registered Republicans. They're Republican politicians who've been voted in by Republicans." He would have just dropped back into his grave again.
I believe that the Republican Party was infiltrated years ago, and people start identifying with that now.
I think there's also a phenomenon where the Republicans have gotten themselves into a position where what their historical platform is no longer relevant to America. I mean, things like smaller government. Forget it. You know, It's mammoth. So on a scale of 1 to 1,000, if you peel it back to 999, what difference does it make, right?
Yeah.
And Republicans aren't even doing that. They're growing it just like the left is.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So because their traditional construct that brought a lot of people into the Republican Party is historically now dead, what's happening, in my opinion, is the left moves left, and then the Republicans have nothing because their old platform doesn't exist anymore. So to remain relevant, they have to move to the left. And then the Democrats move a little more to the left, and the Republicans have to hurry up and catch up.
Right. And they're leaving the truly conservative over here without a party, which is where you have all of these, the conservative parties of like the Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, American Independent Party, have all been spinoffs of people who didn't leave the Republican Party. The Republican Party left them. So you got people like me that worked for years doing our best to drag the Republican Party back where it belongs, away from the left.
And that knuckle bump you saw was because after Bill stepped down as the Nye County Republican chair, I suggested that he and I get together and talk about an alternative party. And he told me that he needed a little time to decompress before he was willing to even consider a project like that.
I am not interested in jumping out of the pan and into the fire right now.
Right.
I got to tell you, I needed a break a year or two ago, and I just now have it. So, and I got to tell you, there is nothing about this presidential election that's going on right now that excites me. Nothing.
Oh, I get it.
Me. So,
you know. Speaking of that, can I throw something in?
Yeah, sure.
Remember we were talking during my
rant? Your co-host, go ahead, add.
Thank you. Remember during my rant I talked about people who you give them the facts and then they just don't care?
Yes.
I had somebody here in town explain to me, he was telling me all the things Donald Trump was going to do when he was president. By the way, I think all of the left choices are abysmal too, so I don't want people to get the wrong idea because
I'm not all around.
Because I'm not a Trump supporter that I somehow support the left. People always say that. Oh, so you want Hillary. What the hell kind of asshole statement is that? Asinine, that's what I meant to say. So anyway, this guy was telling me when Trump gets elected, he's going to do all these things. And I listened to the list, okay? And I said, Trump's not going to do any of those things. He can't. He takes an oath to uphold the laws, to faithfully execute the laws of the union, not make the laws, right? We've had this discussion. You'd have to be a dictator to do all of that. So then this guy says to me, no, you're wrong. Okay? Explain to me why I'm wrong. Well, once Trump gets into office, all those who oppose him are going to have to understand that they will not be reelected if they oppose Trump.
This same dialogue that you hear that has nothing factually based behind it.
So here's what I said to him. I said, let's look at two facts. In 2014, American satisfaction with Congress was at 11%. And they reelected 88% of the incumbents to office. So as recently as 2 years ago, that has been proven that dissatisfaction does not translate into removing people from office, oddly. And then if we look back, well, let's just throw a dart at the board and say the last 60 years. There is not a single case where somebody has been elected to office in one party where the people in the other party went, okay, we give up, we'll do everything you want.
Nope, not even
close. So I explained that to him, right? This is history. This is fact. Recent history, long-term history. Opposing that is nothing. There's zero evidence on his side of the argument, right? When I was done explaining this all to him, he said, you watch. It's going to happen the way I say.
Yeah, and this is nothing new. Every 4 years, people buy into these sorts of, I think the word would be bullshit.
Yes, that
they,
would be.
Go ahead and mark that time, buddy. This is the sort of thing that people get involved in this hyperbole and all of the drama around it, and they want to believe, they want to believe, they want to believe, where the facts show them completely different. You know, most presidential campaign promises are duties of the legislature, of
yes,
Congress.
Absolutely.
And have nothing to do with the executive branch. And I got to tell you, that's one thing where, like, Rand Paul was running. By far, in my opinion, the best candidate, because he gets it. He understands the limitation of government.
Yes.
Understands the limited powers.
And he talks in that term.
And he does. But most of the American public doesn't get it. They vote off of emotion, and they want to get all worked up. Those of us who know about the Constitution, know about our rights, that's why we get worked up over Rand Paul, and everybody else is a complete idiot.
Yeah, and I pretty much come to believe that presidential campaigns are, remember the old Roman thing, bread and circuses? It's the circus for the idiots. Because, first of all, the popular vote doesn't even elect the president.
No, the electoral college
does. Circus for idiots.
And there's no litmus test for being a registered voter.
Yeah.
All right. And we'll be back next week. Thanks.
Take care.